Coffee with Kenobi presents Resistance Reactions. All pilots to your station. You ready?
Let's do this.
Kasuda, good luck on tomorrow's big race.
I don't need luck.
Here we go.
You can't handle the hype. Line them up.
Follow my signals.
Get ready to be impressed.
When it comes to your mission at the spot, I don't want anything to do with it.
The First Order is clearly making weapons.
We're going to need all the help we can get.
I want the station completely destroyed.
It's been too long since we've seen some action.
You showing up always means trouble.
And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harris and David Modders.
Oh, this is exciting. I appear to be tingling all over.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Resistance Reactions. We are back this week, ready to go through an awesome episode of Star Wars Resistance with you. But before we do that, let's go through the introductions, like you don't know who we are already. But if you're new, you need to know. My name is Aaron Harris. I'm one of the two hosts here. And flying with me is my wingman, the good old guy himself, Mr. David Modders. David, how are you doing, my friend?
Good. I was, I think, stupendous and incomparable in the previous weeks, but I'll go with wingman, and I'm always ready to fly with you, buddy, so doing good.
Excellent. Sounds like fun, my friend. Well, how's everything going this week?
Good. Not as good as last weekend when I got to hang out with you down at Central Florida Comic Con and, you know, see voice actors and get these nostalgia trips, you know, with the Munsters and all that kind of stuff. But this week, what I've been trying to do, because of your influence and the guys over at Comics with Kenobi, I'm getting through the second trade paperback of Poe Dameron. I'm really enjoying that. And I think after that, I got to get, I think, three more trade paperbacks to finish out the whole run. But I'm excited to go through the rest of it. So that's been a lot of fun. I did that last night before I went to bed and stuff. And so, you know, I'm trying to enjoy some Star Wars stuff there, and was looking forward to recording with you.
Excellent. Same here, my friend. I always have been looking forward to recording with you. And it's been a pretty quiet week for me. We've had some family activities going on, and of course, unfortunately, some sickness going through the house. So I apologize to anybody if I sound, if you've listened to the show and I sound a little off, that is because I do have a cold, but not a bug, virus, cold, anything like that's going to keep me away from talking Resistance. So
that's right.
We are going to have some fun because we got a great episode to discuss today. We are discussing the Doza Dilemma. Now, personally, I probably would have named this the Sonara Dilemma, because she was the one with the bigger dilemma in this, but Doza did have his own personal dilemma. Of course, this was written by Gavin, and I'm probably going to butcher this name, so Gavin, if you're listening, I do apologize. Gavin Hignite? Wrote this episode, which aired on January 27th, 2019. Great episode. In this episode, basically, the First Order reworks the deal with Kragan, the pirates, who then have Sonara sneak two of the pirates on board the Colossus, who kidnap Tora. Then, of course, Sonara has to make the decision whether to be loyal to her pirates or save her new friend Tora. And, of course, chaos ensues as the pirates come. First Order intervenes and betrays the pirates and, of course, quote-unquote, rescues Tora. And, of course, everything ends with Kaz being utterly confused at why the First Order rescued Tora and, of course, what the status of Sonara is. So, first impressions. David, what are your first thoughts about the Doza Dilemma?
Oh, yeah. The first one was visuals. I love that ship that Kragan Gore has, the Galleon. That was gorgeous, and I love how it's made out of all the old, you know, Imperial tech and stuff. I wrote down, this needs to be a Lego set with all the pirates being minifigs, okay?
I mean, yes.
Could you imagine all those minifigs, you know?
Oh, that would be awesome.
Oh, with Creighton Gore, and you could have Valak, right? You know, the new one that we saw, and the Weequay, and mm-hmm. then, of course, we got Trandoshan. We got all kinds of different pirates that we've gone over all their species in previous episodes, but to have those as a big set of minifigs would be so fun. You know, this is what I'm wanting in this show. There are three things. One, the First Order. They had Phasma in there, Pyre, Vonrig, the Upsilon shuttle. You know, just I love that thing. I've said it before. I think it is so intimidating, so cool looking. I constantly think about a bird of prey when I see it. Again, they had it firing its lasers. Again, I love that. I was thinking about your totals. For how much Phasma has been seen in, you know, two movies versus, you know, several episodes of Resistance here. So, you know, got to see her again. She doesn't speak, but her and Pyre are standing there looking intimidating. Another thing I love from this, Kaz learning more as a spy. I love seeing him fly as well, enjoying that. So on the ground and in the air, very cool to see him. Also seeing the Aces. I think the thing for me is I'd just like to see them in action against the pirates, you know, shooting back and forth and against the First Order. But I put a little note to myself thinking that that's going to come either later in the season or maybe a season finale or something to have some type of big, you know, kind of face off. So they, you know, Doza called the Aces back. But I was like just getting ready to be like, oh, this could be really, really good. I mean, really notch this thing up. But I got a feeling that they're going to make this happen again. And the third point that I had initial thought was just what you'd mentioned. I like how you said it's, you know, Sinara's dilemma even more than Doza's. And so I am curious to see which direction they take with her. Again, I think about you know, Kallus and his character development. I don't know. I don't know if they're gonna do the same thing there or change it up a little bit. Not sure. But again, I'm interested. And I'll go back to my first. I just thought this episode looked gorgeous with all the First Order, the galleon ship, the pirates. Just incredible.
Well, I do have to agree with you. It was absolutely stunning episode visually. And honestly, for me, what struck me the most was the voice acting in this episode, which we'll, of course, get into. But the voice acting in this was top-notch. Visual effects were stunning. This was just all around a great episode, firing on all cylinders. It had everything you wanted in a Star Wars story. You had the Resistance, you had the First Order, you have pirates, you have the Aces, you have everything that you need in a Resistance story. It was right here, and it worked perfectly. And I know you mentioned the Lego sets. We want to see the Galleon as a Lego set. I did read online, it was a couple weeks ago, actually, no, it was probably longer than that, about a month or two ago, that they already have some Star Wars Resistance Lego sets in the works.
Oh my God.
Nothing official announced yet, but apparently there were some leaked photos from somebody over in Germany who got a hold of an early Lego calendar, and it looks like there's going to be the Fireball and Von Reg's TIE Fighter.
Very cool.
So those were... Hopefully we'll get an announcement on those. Supposedly they were supposed to come out later this year, so probably toward the end of the year with the fall winter line that they usually release. So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
So let's go into this great episode here, the Doza Dilemma. You brought up in your opening statement how visually stunning this episode was, and it truly, truly was, because it covered all aspects of the Colossus. At this point, we got to see it opened up at Starkiller Base, and it has had it, of course, all over the Colossus, different in the Hive Tower and Jaeger's Garage. the salvage yard. It was all over the place, and every scene was just stunning background, stunning color. The lighting was perfect. I mean, you can't get much better than what we saw in this episode. What struck you most about the visuals in this episode?
Well, you know, you were making me think about it, the lighting. You know, when they're on those two skiffs in the water and they're shooting away from the Colossus, I just thought that coloring was just perfect. And I loved how that other ship kind of swooped down in, and then they sent those two skiffs off, and just watching how they animated the water, watching the skiffs go off into the distance, and then that bigger skiff veers off to the left, has the big laser cannon on the back of it. Oh my, it's just gorgeous. You know, seeing Toradoza not only in her room, but on the back of the smaller skiffs, on the big skiff, seeing her. Of course, like I said, the galleon, just like they said, it's supposed to be the silhouette of a shark. I love the flags on it. I kept thinking about Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, I said in two episodes ago when we covered Bebo, very much thought about Pirates of the Caribbean 2, A Dead Man's Chest with a big kraken. And this one, you know, thinking about these big, beautiful ships that they have in Pirates of the Caribbean. So the visual of that ship, again, is gorgeous. To see that, you know, in an all-out battle, you know, like if it's just the Pirates against the Aces, would be just beautiful. To see the Aces against, you know, Von Reg and his fighter, as well as, you know, those shuttles, you know, the Kylo Ren shuttle and stuff, I would look forward to that. But those kind of visuals are just, you know, they're great. It's unreal. And Kurt, you go back to, you know, you and I have talked about this in some of the first episodes. You know, Von Reg pops off the screen. Pyre pops off the screen. I love it. I love the color. I love how beautiful it is. I know I'm gushing over it, but come on. It just, you know, I just watched the episode tonight before just to get it fresh in my head again. It's beautiful. It's just, you know, it's gorgeous.
No, it absolutely is. It is stunningly gorgeous. I absolutely love the show and the artwork in the show. To me, the opening scene, when it first starts, that opening scene with the two Star Destroyers sitting out in front of Starkiller Base with the TIE Fighter flying, oh my gosh, that was visually stunning. To me, that is more impressive. Those are more impressive shots of Starkiller Base than we got in The Force Awakens.
Yeah, they're close.
I mean, to me, these are better. Just the color, the richness, how alive it seems. Then, of course, you get into what you mentioned, the ocean planet of Castellan. And I tell you, the speeders buzz the water, the way they just fly around, I mean, everything is just perfect. And I love the design of, and you brought it up, the design of the ships in this episode. We've, of course, got a lot of pirate ships in this, and the pirate ships are heavily salvaged Imperial ships, Imperial products. And that is, in and of itself, you know, is just a phenomenal to think about, but to visually see how they built that and having to the thought process to go in and say, all right, let's use this piece from the AT-AT, let's use this piece from an AT-TE, let's use this piece from a Lambda shuttle, and just try to morph it all together. It's like they just dumped out their Legos and started throwing pieces together.
Yeah.
The design is incredible in this. And I loved it. I think my favorite piece of the ships, and we're was seeing the head of the AT-AT just kind of laying on the front of the galleon. Huge, man. That was awesome.
Oh, and what about the crow's nest that Creighton Gore's in? That's an, you know, upside down AT-TE foot.
Exactly.
And holding him. It's just so creative. That's so neat. You know. Gosh.
I love it. I mean, it's a great way for them to make subtle nods to other parts of the saga. the ATTE from the prequels and Clone Wars. Of course, the AT-AT from the original saga. I mean, these are all the Lambda Shuttle. These are all nods from these other parts of the saga, and it's just tying it all in together. And to me, that was incredible. And there's a lot of nods in this episode to the other saga. Let's jump into to some of those nods there, some of those references. We got Tora Doza, of course, has a new video game that she invites Tam and Kaz and, of course, Sonara to come up to the tower and enjoy. And basically, it's a shooting game, and they're shooting the spherical targets like Luke was using in A New Hope.
Yeah, I thought that was really neat.
Oh, it was great. I loved it.
Yeah.
And you know what? The one thing that jumped out at me about this scene, though,
what's that?
The gun they were using for the game, the toy gun.
Yeah,
it was colored like Chopper.
Oh, it was colored like Chopper. Yeah,
a lot of orange in there. That Chopper orange. So
I know. Well, I thought you were going to mention because they had the orange pieces to say it was like, you know, for blaster safety, it was called in Bucket's List. You know what I thought about when I saw that gun and they were talking about blaster safety is, I thought about us being at Star Wars Celebration, but also at Central Florida Comic Con, and you know, you got to have those orange tips, or you got to have the little tag that goes around the place where the trigger is for safety and stuff. So I was thinking about Comic Cons when I saw that thing. That was pretty fun how they put a little almost like a nod to Comic Con, you know?
Oh yeah. It was great. I mean, they made that realistic. I mean, they put a lot of color into it to make it look like a toy, and they did a great job doing that.
Yeah,
so it made it more real life. Per se. So, but that was a lot of fun. Since we're talking about the game, let's talk about that whole scene there. We have Tam and Tora, and of course Kaz and Sonara and BB-8 and Buggles all up in the high tower, hanging out, having a good old time. And of course Tora, of course, goes first, and not bad. She gets 3 out of 4 out of 5, and then of course Tam goes and gets 2 out of 5, and then of course Sonara goes and she of course hits every one, goes 5 for 5, and everybody's like, "Whoa, how'd you do that?" Then of course poor Kaz gets up there, and well, you know, he must have gone to Stormtrooper school, because to quote Tam, he couldn't hit the broadside of a freighter.
Right. Well, and you know what I thought about, referring back to a previous episode we covered, would it have been Station Theta Black when he does the simulated shooting and Poe is like, how about you start, you know, doing some real shooting here? And so I was thinking back to that episode, and man, he, you know, oh gosh, he's got to really do some more practicing here.
Yeah, well, apparently it's easier to hit something when you're in the cockpit of a fighter than it is when you're holding the blaster yourself.
Yeah.
So, but he does a good job, and it's a good episode, and a lot of fun happening throughout the episode. One of the most comical scenes for me in this episode happened just after that scene. It cuts to Jaeger's garage. And
oh yes,
Niku and Kaz are working on a speeder, and next thing you know, you see BB-8 roll up to a cabinet, pick up a hammer, and just beat on the closet and just take off like nobody's business. Next thing you know, the doors fly open, Buck comes out, and he takes off after BB-8. If that's not a sibling relationship, I don't know what is. And that, you know, as much as we in the last episode we said our piece about wanting to see more Bucket, I have no problem seeing more Bucket like that. Bring me more Bucket and BB-8 sibling rivalry. I loved it. What did you think of that scene?
Oh, I love that. That's the kind of stuff you know, like you said, siblings, or I think about cats, like one, you know, come up and just hitting the other one in the head, batting it and running, or, you know, I love that. And with droids doing that, it's so fun. We did say we wanted to see more Bucket, but to see him come running out and flying around was really good. Really good to see. And, of course, I know you're going to comment on what's inside of the door to Bucket's, I guess what, his, Bucket's closet, it's called, yeah. Bucket's closet. So I'm going to let you do the honors.
Chopper's back.
I saw that and I thought, here goes Aaron. Here we go.
You know, I will admit, when I watched the episode, I did not notice it.
No, you can't.
But
no,
it's hard to notice. Then I went back then after the Bucket's list and they put the fact that, you know, Chopper, one of the C-1 droids is up there. And I go back and I'm like pausing every second trying to get a glimpse of it. And you can pause it at a certain scene and catch it. But man, Bucket's a Chopper fan.
Yes. No, it makes us like him even more, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's like having a poster of Tom Brady up in your in your bedroom. I mean, he's got Chopper up. It doesn't get much better than that. I mean, he doesn't even have an R2 up there. He's got Chopper.
Oh my god. I knew this would go right to your head.
Oh, oh yes, that made my night when I read that. I mean, that was just, to me, that was absolute perfection. I was like, Chopper. I seriously did a little dance at work when I saw that this afternoon. Do a little dance right now. Do.
Well, so, I've seen you in real life when you see Chopper things, and people who are listening, it is not made up. I've seen Aaron almost spontaneously combust when he sees some pretty cool Chopper stuff. So it's all real.
Oh, it is. Chopper has always been my Chopper is my thing right now. So has been for a while. He's sitting here looking at me.
That's right.
Hi, Chop. Anywho.
Hi, Chop. we're pulling the curtain back. They're really getting a feel for it.
I shouldn't have taken the cold medicine before we started.
Well, and I did get to go to the, you know, Resistance Reactions studios in Lakeland, Florida, and so it's all legit. I've seen all the Chopper stuff, all the Resistance stuff. Aaron and I took some pictures with, you know, the Resistance figures. We had a great time, but I'm off on a tangent here. So.
Oh no, you're fine. I was off on the tangent first, so okay. So. Let's circle the wagon back up here, and let's talk about, you know, the First Order, because we got a couple things we need to hit on that. We'll save the First Order for now. Let's talk about Sonara, because Sonara, of course, she is given a mission by Kragan to sneak these pirates on. And they want her to get them into the high tower for some special mission. And, of course, trying to figure out how to do that. That's how she bumps into Kaz and Tora and Tam and gets invited up by Tora up there. And when they ask her how could she shoot so good during that game, she said her dad taught her to shoot on Vancor.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is a reference there, and a very interesting reference, of course. To wonder what she, of course, I love how the Bucket List put it, like, I wonder if she was shooting
Gundarks.
That's right. Because, of course, we saw the Gundarks on Vancor in the Clone Wars. So, very interesting to get that little bit of background from Sonara there. But, you know, we begin to see her begin to struggle throughout this episode. And I think that was very well written, very well played by the actress who does her voice, Nazeen Contractor, who does a great job with Sonara in this episode, we see her begin to wrestle with her emotions, because she's gotten to know these people on the Colossus, the more she respects them, the more she likes them, the more friendly she gets with them, the more friends she is with them. So she begins to have this dilemma where now she's like, okay, I work for Kragan, but at the same point, even Kragan's calling her out, you know, you're becoming too close to your friends there, at one point, he says. And we begin to see her wrestling with that, especially when she finds out they're kidnapping Tora. And she's like, no, she decides this ain't going to happen. So she's having to make that decision to stop Kragan's orders. How do you feel about Sonara after this episode, after seeing the dilemma she was put in and the decision that she made here?
Yeah, I a lot of thoughts, but let me kind of parse it down. You know, I've mentioned this before on Rebels Reactions, when we covered some, you know, a lot of different episodes there, but just briefly, if you think about it, it was April 2005, April 2005, I'm reading an article in USA Today, and they're interviewing George Lucas before Episode 3 comes out, Revenge of the Sith, and it was the first Star Wars movie to have a PG-13 rating. And I remember the interviewer asked him, you know, Mr. Lucas, what are you hoping young people get, you know, from this episode, considering, you know, what ends up happening and some of the difficult scenes that we see? And I loved what George Lucas said. He says, I hope young, you know, boys and girls, men and women, will look and see the decisions Anakin makes and don't do them. And, you know, Star Wars has always been about that, right? What's the right thing to do? What's the wrong thing? And then the gray, and, you know, and they play on that a lot in the comics and the novels, and, you know, how do the Rebels see it? How do the Resistance see it? How does the Empire see it? How does the First Order see it? And I love that they're doing it here again, here in Resistance, you know, having a character really examine what's right and wrong. And what you see is Sonara sees, you know, when people treat you right, you know, and of course they have it set up with, you know, Sonara being invited up to Toradoza's room. She's, you know, they're my friends. You can always come up here. And that when people treat you right, you don't turn around and treat them wrong. And, you know, you and I have talked about this show and the parts that are for young children, the parts for adults. This is really good learning. I think just like George Lucas said for Revenge of the Sith, I think there's a lot to learn in each of the movies as well as these animated shows. And so in this case, they're using Sonara to really teach that lesson, you know, the golden rule. When people treat you right, treat them right. And you treat them right, they'll treat you right. So it's really good to see.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree with that. And I love how they portrayed it in this episode. Because we always talk about the growth that a character has, and we see a lot of forced growth on Sonara in this episode. I stand by my statement from when I opened the show. This should have been called Sonara's Dilemma, not the Doza Dilemma, because she was the one put in a dilemma where she had to go against who she worked for and all her friends that she's had for years, or her current friends, the new friends that she's made on the Colossus, the ones that are truly there, who will truly have her back. So I want to keep talking about this, but first we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk some more Sonara and the Doza Dilemma. All right, and we're back. David and Aaron here on Resistance Reactions, talking the Doza Dilemma. Before we took a break, we were discussing the growth of Sonara-san through this episode, and David, of course, gave his thoughts on her growth and how it portrayed it, and he hit on some very good points. You know, she wound up making a decision to go against Kragan, and she went against every the whole thing. After she got the ball rolling, she got the other pirates through the security. She snuck them into the tower. But by the time she snuck them in the tower and she realized what their goal was, it it ended. Everything got off hand for her, and it got a little crazy here. I mean, you can listen. I mean, here, I'm going to play a clip real quick, and you can hear her when she finally realizes that this is not what she is wanting to happen. Here, listen to this.
What are you after anyway? What is so important to Doza?
His little girl.
Tora.
You can hear that change in her demeanor when she realizes it's Tora. Even just as she says, Tora! And it just completely changes her attitude to what's going on. She calls Craig in right after that, and she's like, why are you doing this? Why Tora? And he's like, no, they're paying us three times what we want. And he goes, I didn't tell you because you are turning soft. And he basically just, you know, calls her out at that point. And we have wind up with her, you know, going, you know what, this isn't right. I'm going to stop it. But the question is, even though she made the decision, she turned on Kragan and the pirates to stop them from attempt to stop them from kidnapping Tora. Is it too much too late?
Yeah, too much or too little too late? Yeah.
Too little too late.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think, we see Kaz's thoughts, you know, about his thoughts about her towards the end of the episode. Either she's working with him or she is a pirate. But I get a sense there's going to be, you know, one of those scenes where, you know, she really does intervene and help and really proves to, you know, to Kaz and maybe Tam and others, you know, or Tora, whoever finds out that she is part of those pirates, that there has been a genuine change. You know how they usually do that in the show and stuff. And maybe there'll be resistance, forgive the pun, to them believing it. Oh, my gosh, that's pretty bad at this time of night. But resistance to it, but then ultimate acceptance, you know, and that would be a good thing to see. It's one of the things we want. You know, I do it as a psychologist. We want to see people change. It's not easy. If it was easy, people would do it all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll be too little too late. I think there'll be that initial frustration. Kaz will realize how much she was lying to him, but he might look at himself and say, you know, I wasn't telling her the truth either about what I was. But we'll see.
True. I can see what you're saying there, but being that, you know, he hasn't been honest with who he is to pretty much anybody there outside of Yeager and BB-8, but the difference is he's not purposely causing, well, he's caused issues for his friends, but he's not. I had to roll that one back a second, but
hello.
he has caused them issues. But he's not, you know, sneaking Poe and some of the other fighter pilots in to kidnap Doza to keep him from signing with the First Order. He's not putting he's not purposely doing things that will put, you know, he is a klutz, so he does stuff that, you know, he tries to do the right thing and winds up causing issues. But she's doing, you know, she knows that Kragan's up to no good. Right. And chose to follow those instructions anyway.
And you make me think about the big discussion that you hear a lot of Star Wars fans talking about coming into, you know, really literally a year from now. I know it's January right now, so it'll be December. Will we see Kylo Ren redeemed? Can he be redeemed? And you hear arguments on both sides. Kind of a, you know, not the exact same argument, but, you know, can she turn good? I think she can. Will it be accepted by others?
Very good. That's a mystery we will have to see played out as these episodes go on. Really good. Let's shift into something a little lighter for a few moments, and let's talk about voice cast. We got official confirmation in this episode that Bo Keevil, Yellow Ace, Bo Keevil, is voiced by Chopper.
Well, yes. I don't know if people...
Who is actually voiced by Dave Filoni.
Right, exactly. You know, it strikes me that Dave's more involved with this than I thought.
That, you know, that was the first thing that hit my mind, too. You know, because we heard he was going to be the executive producer, but, you know, Justin Ridge was going to be the one at the helm. He was going to be more hands-off on this one. But, you know, he's popping in with voices here and there. And Bo Keevil, one of the aces he's now voicing. So, you know, definitely he's a little more involved than I initially thought, which I think is absolutely awesome.
Absolutely. And you know, it makes sense that he's one of the aces, because that's what he talked about really wanting to emulate from World War II, and to honor those military, you know, men and women who serve. And you know, that was a big impetus for him creating an animated show around these aces, was because of that history, right? And he talked about it in some of the first videos released promoting this show.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does make sense that he's one of the aces. I love it. I love that he's still involved. You want to talk about making me feel better? Ooh.
You talk about making everybody feel better. I mean, because that was absolutely a surprise that happened there. I mean, when I was watching the show and that popped up, I was like, whoa, wait, hold on here.
You texted it to me.
I immediately snapshot the credits and sent it to you and posted it and everything. But what impressed me more about the, you know, I'm not surprised he's doing a voice. But what did surprise me, and it shouldn't have surprised me, was he was doing Bo Keevil's. Because who's his favorite Jedi from the Clone Wars?
Oh, Plo Koon.
Plo Koon. And here's the same species as Plo Koon. And now he's voicing it as the ace. Should not have surprised me at all. Should not have surprised me. But I absolutely loved it. And we got a glimpse of what he sounded like during the shorts that came on during December. During the mid-season break, we hear his voice, and that was great. And then the question was, who's voicing him? Then, of course, this episode, we get him talking for a little bit, and we find out at the end it is Dave. So let's listen to Dave playing Bo Keevil.
Have them in my sight. Negative, negative. It's a decoy. There's nobody on those speeders. Fan out, wind the search.
They disguise that voice really well.
Oh, they modulate it. I was thinking back to, I think it might have been Flight of the Defender in Rebels Reactions, and you and I were covering it, and Dave Filoni and Steve Bloom do the two stormtroopers standing out in front of one of the defenders Vault Scaris flies.
Yep.
And they don't modulate it like they did there for Bo Keevil, and you can tell it's Dave Filoni, you can tell it's Steve Bloom, you know, when Steve Bloom is not doing Zeb.
Yeah.
But in this case, yeah, unless you look at the end credits, which you and I always look at, you won't know that that's him because of the modulation.
Oh, yeah, no, you wouldn't. And he did fabulous job. I was so happy to see Dave. And then we had, of course, Valak, one of the pirates who was smuggled on board the station, was voiced by Jennifer Hale.
Yeah, Lucasfilm employee. Is she Jennifer Hale? That's not what is her role? I didn't look it up before we got on tonight.
I knew it, then you asked me and I forgot.
I know Lynn Hale is, isn't she like kind of like a public relations and stuff, and Tracy Canobio does a lot of that stuff. But Jennifer Hale, I think she's in that same realm. I know she's Lucasfilm employee. That was the first thing that stood out, was Dave Filoni and Jennifer Hale. Please forgive me, Jennifer Hale. I just know I want your job at Lucasfilm, okay? I mean, it's that cool. Any job I'll take. I'm still trying to be staff psychologist at Lucasfilm.
I think you're combining two people there.
Oh,
Yes, because Hale actually, Jennifer Hale is actually a voice actress who has done a ton of work in Knights of the Old Republic. She was in Star Wars The Clone Wars. She was the voice of Aayla Secura in The Clone Wars.
Nice.
So she, and of course, she has done a lot of video games and stuff like that as well. So she's, so I think you combined the two people and kind of merged them into one there. Lynn Hale is the Lucasfilm employee.
Yes. Well, I want Lynn Hale's job. I'll never get it, but I will
take anybody at Lucasfilm's job.
What's that?
I'll take anybody at Lucasfilm's job.
Oh, gosh, I know. Janitor, you know? I mean, come on.
You need a coffee boy?
What's that?
Say they need a coffee boy? I can get them some coffee.
Oh, gosh. I know for Pablo, for Andy Gutierrez, you know, anybody up there. I'll help Scott Bromley, right, with the Star Wars, anything. Sign me up.
Yeah, I'll follow Pablo around with a carafe of coffee.
I know. I know. You help him. I'll help Andy. We're good.
Yeah, we'll be perfect. We'll be set.
Yeah.
Then we will have nothing to talk about because we've all signed NDEs.
I know.
NDAs. NDAs.
We wouldn't be able to do a podcast.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
But imagine the stories we would have to tell.
I know.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Oh, all right. Well, let's go ahead and start head toward the end here. I want to go. I know I started it earlier and I pushed it off. The First Order. We're starting to see the plans that the First Order have in place for the Colossus start to come into place. They want the Colossus. We still don't know why. But they want the Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
They've been funding the pirates. We've known that since the beginning of the season. They are working with them, getting them to raid, and then they're trying to work with Doza to stop the raids. They're playing the field. Now, this is a game to them. This is the plan they have in place to take over the Colossus. And we see it come into fruition as they use the pirates to kidnap Tora, then they rescue Tora, break their deal with the pirates by firing and stealing Tora from them without paying the pirates. And then, of course, Von Reg and the First Order look like the heroes as they return Tora to Captain Doza. And then Von Reg, at the order of Pyre, leaves some stormtrooper guards for Doza. The episode ends.
Yeah, without even asking him. Exactly.
So, wow, this is... you talk about a wave of deception and deceptfulness. I mean, this is a lot of deceit by the First Order going around right now, which is what you would expect. But this is, I mean... This is right out of the gate here. We're having this type of in-depth deception going on. How, what are your thoughts on the First Order and their plan as they're carrying this out?
Yeah, I you know what I did after going through Bucket's List, like I do every week? I went back and watched some of the Resistance Rewinds. Those are there, you know, anybody listening can go to StarWars.com and watch those. And went back and watched two or three of them. And, you know, a lot of times they have Justin Ridge, Athena Portillo, and Brandon Aumann, right? A-U-M-A-N, I believe. And they were talking about, I went back to the one that covers Doza. And in the clip, it shows his uniform, right, you know, that we saw in a previous episode. And I believe Brandon Aumann talks about why Doza is not going for what the First Order is doing, because he knows when he was part of Imperial forces, he knew how a lot of them acted and what they did and how deceitful they were. And so that is obviously fueling his skepticism of anything the First Order does. He's obviously consistently refused any First Order Occupation and the Colossus. But it was interesting, kind of like you mentioned, forced growth on Sinara. Well, there was forced First Order troopers on Doza there. And so this really starts to feel like that slippery slope and, you know, the subtle threat. You know, you see they have this beautiful clip of what Doza's face and Tora's face as Von Reg is speaking about, you know, how dangerous it is in this part of the galaxy and stuff. And so it's just getting real creepy and really serious and, you know, really serious for Doza and the whole Colossus. He's getting a squeeze and they're just deliciously deceptive and evil in doing it.
Oh, they certainly are. And, you know, I like that we're seeing this side of the First Order. We've seen the First Order through in The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens. And honestly, from those, I would think they're more of an Imperial wannabe. But we're seeing a lot more. We're seeing a different side to them in this, even compared to seeing the Empire in Rebels. When we reviewed Rebels and watched Star Wars Rebels, the Empire was the Empire. They weren't trying to be deceptive. They weren't trying to anything. They were ruling. They were making decisions, and their decisions were based on their rule. Whereas here, we're seeing the First Order, who is still relatively unknown to apparently the rest of the galaxy. We're starting to see their tentacles starting to weave into the life on the Colossus. And I'm sure as they're doing on the Colossus, it's weaving into other parts of the area as well, which is why Leia and the Resistance are there. So to me, this is a more interesting story with the First Order as time goes on, to see how they weave their web into the force that we see them become by the time the Hosnian system's destroyed.
Oh, I love what you said. I love how you, the metaphors you were using there. That, and it is interesting to see this development. You know, a lot of times when you go back and try to fill things in, it can be a difficult process. You know, we had mentioned in a previous episode that during the break you had knocked out Thrawn Alliances and Bloodline. And in Bloodline, you know, you see Leia, just like you said, trying to build the Resistance at the same time that this First Order is coming up. And both groups are basically trying to have to develop, you know, their strength and their arsenal without the New Republic really getting involved. Very interesting to watch. Versus, like you said, the Empire's the Empire. Boom, they're there, they're in your face, and there's no sneaking around. And the Rebels were, you know, a cell kind of trying to develop. But yes, the First Order, very different. Sneaking around at the outer edges of the galaxy until we see, you know, the Force Awaken.
Oh, absolutely. And it's going to be, I look forward to the continuation of the show because this is going to be fun to see develop. So, whoops, perfect. I just pulled the recorder down. So,
oh no,
nope, still going. No worries.
Okay,
yeah, still going. All right, all right. So, with that, we will wrap up our discussion on the Doza Dilemma. So, final thoughts, David.
Yeah, I just want to return to the visuals. It's gorgeous. And you can tell with the mid-season trailer. I think I know we're going to get even more gorgeous visuals. There, as we've talked, they're able to create so much more. It seems like so much more quickly than they were able to do in the Clone Wars or even Rebels. I'm not sure why. I guess maybe they'll give us some extras when we buy, you know, these different seasons on Blu-ray and DVD. But that would be very interesting to know how they do that. But it's just beautifully gorgeous, the work that Amy Beth Christensen and all these artists are doing. That's gorgeous. Just like we said, I can't say enough about the development of the First Order. I look forward to more of that. You and I have been very consistent that we want to see more of Phasma, more of Von Reg, more of Pyre. They gave it to us here. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, the development of all of our characters, not just Sonara, but obviously, you know, Kaz as a spy and getting Poe back in there and, you know, seeing how much Yeager wants to be involved, Tam. And, of course, I'm looking forward to seeing the Aces more. We got to see them fly, beautiful visuals flying out there over the beautiful ocean there on Castellan. But I'm ready to see more of them. So overall, just really, really love this episode.
Oh, absolutely. I love the episode as well. A lot of fun, a lot of... It was just everything that you would want in a Resistance episode at this point. The Pirates, the First Order. I can't say enough about the voice talent in this. Christopher Sean and Nazeen Contractor, who play, of course, Kaz and Sonara. Stellar performances by them both, as they showed a full range of emotion in their acting. Through this episode, so it was absolutely perfect. I can't say enough about it. They both of them thoroughly impressed me beyond belief in this episode. The visuals were mind-boggling, mind-blowing. The colors were bright and vibrant and dark when they needed to be. I mean, it was just both shades of, I mean, complete total opposites throughout the episode, and it was just so bright. Vibrant and so perfect. I loved it. Chopper, man, they brought Chopper into this mix. I never saw that coming. We got Chopper on, we got Bucket as a Chopper fan. So that's awesome. I never thought I'd be talking Chopper on Resistance.
All right.
But hey, you know what? I'll take it and run with it. Can't get enough of a Chopper. I love seeing BB-8 and Bucket go at it. There's a little sibling rivalry there. It was great. It was a lot of fun. And having Dave Filoni playing Bo Keevil again, it was perfect. I loved it. Of course, as you know, if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, we go through and we rate each episode based on its merits. As you could say, like a school grade A, B, C, D, or F. I can honestly say, in all the years I've done podcasting, I don't think I've ever seen a show get an F or a D, honestly. But this was a great episode for me, and I know David's already got his grade written down. He hasn't told me what it is yet, but so I'll go first. This was a great episode. It was a lot of fun. It was really exciting. I will say I was initially going to go with a B on this. Then I realized then the more I watched this, the more impressed by this episode, the more impressed by the voice acting and the by Christopher Sean and Nazeen Contractor. They blew me away the more I watched it. Bo Keevil, man, being Dave Filoni, and then they gave me Chopper, man. I mean, this episode just fired on all cylinders for me. So I'm honestly going to actually up my grade and give her an A-.
Okay.
How about you, David?
I did an A.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah, did B+ last week for Dangerous Business, but definitely an A, you know, considering all the things you mentioned, the visuals, the First Order development. Oh man, I think, like I said, Chopper. I love that they had a new species. We'll go over that in a little bit. They got a great Niku saying of the week. The nods, you know, to Luke in episode 4, to Kitster saying this is so wizard, and just how beautiful the galleon is. I can really see a lot of exciting things coming from hopefully some battles between the pirates and the aces, and between the Aces and the First Order. So there's so much potential for exciting stuff. This really sets it up. We see, you know, the character development, like we were saying. And I love it. I really love this episode.
Excellent, excellent. And of course, we want to know what you think of the Dosa Dilemma, or the Sonara Dilemma, as I like to call it. Let us know. Hit us up on Twitter at Resist Reactions, or of course on Facebook. Just search us out, Resistance Reactions. Of course, you'll find the links in the show notes. Of course, you can also email us your thoughts, resistancereactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. So, we're not done yet. Of course, we have David's Creature Corner coming up. But first, it's time for Niku's Saying of the Week. Of course, we've gone a couple weeks without Niku saying anything. But we got a saying in this episode. He actually only had two lines, but one of them actually did leave me in stitches. So that, of course, would be Niku's Saying of the Week. Here we go.
We are finished for now, Kaz. I believe the accelerator will hold. Unless it explodes.
Boom!
Kaz's face after he says that is great.
Oh, it was perfect. Unless it explodes.
Exactly.
They did a great job animating this episode. I mean, they do a great job animating them all, but this, yeah, there was just something about this one where the animation just really, it really popped. The colors, the visuals, everything just really popped. So that was Niku's Saying of the Week. Now stay tuned for David and David's Creature Corner.
That's right. You know, we keep track of this every week. Last week we had two new ones, if people remember. We had Taroj Ki as a Katerian, and we found out what Flix was. A Gozo, right? And Tracy Canobio helped us out with that, so we bumped up to 33. Got the new one. Not Lynn Hale, but Jennifer Hale is Valak, and Valak is a Paladuvan. And people obviously know Paladuvans from The Phantom Menace, seeing Aura singing that, and of course we see her much more in The Clone Wars. And so I thought that was pretty cool, seeing a slight variation on Aura Sing. I love her as a character, and so seeing Valak was pretty cool. I thought she was going to be shot there by Major Vonray, but she looks to escape, and I think we're going to see her again. So we're up to 34 now, my friend. Again, that's not counting the ones that haven't been named, but we keep going up. So this has been a fun portion to do and to keep track of at this show. I'm going to keep going with it, and they'll keep, I think, giving us a little bit every week. So that's pretty fun.
Oh, absolutely. They most certainly will, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And this whole show has been a lot of fun.
Well, this has been tons of fun.
Yes, it has. It's been tons of fun. So we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. Of course, if you do want to, keep your Star Wars going, the best way to do that is check out our family of podcasts here on the Coffee with Kenobi Network. Of course, our flagship show, Coffee with Kenobi, hosted by Dan Z. If you like comics, David mentioned them earlier in the episode, Comics with Kenobi with Matt and Jeff. They will fill you in on the latest in comics, Star Wars comics, and on all the canon coming from that. And they do it in such a way that instead of just listening to get the canon, you will want to run out to your local comic book store, buy the books, and read them yourselves, because they do a great job keep building your interest into the stories there. Of course, if you like the Legends line of books, the old Expanded Universe, check out Legends Library. They do a great job reviewing. They've been going through every single one of those books and are doing a great job there. And of course, Lattes with Leia. Love the show. Great conversation. Great topics each month. And all from a fangirl perspective. And it's just a lot of great stuff. So make sure you check that out. So.
But how are we going to communicate at any given moment, Kaz?
Well, that's a good question, Niku. David, if somebody wants to talk Star Wars with you, and how would they go about doing that?
Absolutely. Two ways. One is on Twitter. My handle is David_Modders. That's MODDERS. And then email, of course, is dmodders@coffeewithkenobi.com.
Excellent. And of course, for me, the best way to get hold of me, of course, is online. Of course, you can hit my personal Twitter account, TAHarris121079, or of course, email me aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. And of course, don't forget to follow the show, like and subscribe to us on iTunes. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, so make sure you get us, make sure you're following so you don't miss a beat of what is to come. Because this show is really taking off. It's getting its feet. It's starting to sprint. And we are going to have just a great time going forward. Of course, we will be back next week with the next episode of Star Wars Resistance. That episode, of course, will be called The First Order Occupation. First Order Occupation. So we'll be back next week with that review. David, pleasure as always, my friend. Thank you for joining me, as always.
Oh, thanks for having me, buddy. It's always fun to do it. I'm excited for these next episodes. It's building up.
It is building up. It's a lot of fun. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Thank you, everybody, for listening in to Resistance Reactions. Remember, this is the Resistance podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.